Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I am reading the San Angelo Standard Times newspaper for the week of Sunday, August 14th, 2022. We'll read local articles, state articles, local sports articles, and then a couple of feature columns. I'll begin with three locally written articles from the business section that have been published over the last few weeks. San Angelo renovating McDonald's, adding one to South Bryant. By Rosanna Frere, published August 15th. San Angelo citizens have noticed the McDonald's on Southwest Boulevard is under construction, but some may not realize the food chain is also building a new restaurant in town. Eric Wilson, owner and operator of San Angelo McDonald's, said the restaurant at 4330 Southwest Boulevard was built in 1979 and has been demolished. "It's being rebuilt with the new, bigger, and better restaurant design," Wilson said. He said it's projected to open in late November 2022 and will have an indoor and outdoor play yard. The new restaurant is located at 1802 South Bryant Boulevard and is expected to open at the end of October 2022, Wilson said. When the restaurant on Southwest closed for the rebuild, the employees were sent to other locations in San Angelo. Wilson said there are plans to add quite a few more employees for the restaurants. There are currently three McDonald's restaurants open for business in San Angelo. The one at 520 North Bryant Boulevard is open 24 hours. There is also one inside the Walmart Supercenter at 610 29th Street. Interested applicants can text APPLY to 325-219-8099. There are $300 sign-on bonuses, free meals while on the clock, among other benefits. Alejandro's Kitchen and Tequila Bar opens in San Angelo, by Rosanna Frere, published July 8th. Alejandro's Kitchen and Tequila opened in San Angelo on Wednesday, July 6th, in the place of the former Grand Buffet restaurant. The Tex-Mex restaurant is at 4388 Sherwood Way and is open every day from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Renovation began in early April 2022, shortly after the previous restaurant closed. San Angelo restaurant found to have underpaid workers violated child labor standards, by Rosanna Frere, published July 7th. The Charlie's Philly Steaks location in San Angelo has closed after it was determined the business underpaid workers and violated child labor standards, according to a release from the U.S. Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division. The employer instructed the workers to clock out after the regular closing time, but made them stay to continue working, the release stated. Charlie's Philly Steaks also violated child labor standards by allowing five minors to work more than the number of hours and past specific times federal law allows. Investigators also found the employer in violation of child labor prohibited occupants when it regularly allowed one minor to use a deep fryer. Back wages included $3,184 in overtime back wages, $3,184 in liquidated damages, and $3,786 in assessed civil money penalties. "This young workforce is providing high-demand services to all of us. The federal child labor laws were enacted to ensure that when young people work, the work is safe and does not jeopardize their health, well-being, or educational opportunities," said Wage and Hour District Director Nicole Sellers. "Violating a worker's right to get paid what they earned and putting minors in danger is not only illegal, it leaves a negative impression of the workforce on our youth in our community. This is most critical in a period when employers struggle to find a much-needed workforce." The business was located at Sunset Mall, 4001 Sunset Drive. It has been closed since late May 2022, along with Great American Cookies and Pretzel Maker, which are all under the same operator. San Angelo Standard Times opinion section. This piece expresses the views of the author, separate from those of this publication. Former San Angelo Mayor Lawn calls out Pfluger for vote against same-sex marriage rights. Published July 29th. J.W. Lawn, who served as San Angelo's mayor from 2003 to 2019, has penned an open letter to U.S. Congressman August Pfluger following his recent no vote by Pfluger against the Respect for Marriage Act, which would require the federal government to recognize the validity of same-sex marriages. Though same-sex marriage is currently already legal in all 50 states due to the Supreme Court's 2015 decision in the case of Obergefell versus Hodges, the recent overturning of Roe v. Wade for abortion rights prompted the proposal of the Respect for Marriage Act to codify same-sex marriage rights into federal law in the event Obergefell versus Hodges is also overturned. Pfluger, who represents 29 counties in Texas's 11th congressional district, was one of 157 House Republicans to vote against the bill on Tuesday, July 19th. The Respect for Marriage Act is now being considered by the Senate, where 10 Republican lawmakers are needed to join all 50 Democrats to send the legislation to President Joe Biden for approval. Like Pfluger, Lawn was once a rising political star on the West Texas scene before he abruptly left San Angelo following his re-election in 2009 to pursue a romantic relationship in Mexico with a man who he later married that was not a legal U.S. citizen. Congressman August Pfluger, you have a constituency that is hurting, including me. I hope that hurting others isn't your intention and that I can appeal to your basic sense of fairness as an elected political leader. I'm compelled to write this open letter because of your recent no vote against codifying equal rights for same-sex civil marriage. This does not represent the values of San Angelo and West Texas. That I know. 47 other House Republicans, including our neighboring West Texas Representative Tony Gonzalez, were able to see the fairness of equal protection under the law. Apparently, you have not. I'm hopeful that 10 more Republican senators will find the fortitude to support equal protection. It is way too easy, frankly cynical, for Republicans to summarily dismiss the LGBT community. This feels like the death of hard-won respect and decades of struggle. I recently read that 71% of Americans support homosexual rights. Your current position strikes me as calculated and sinister. It is not founded on basic fairness. It threatens our gay and lesbian friends with physical danger, disrespect, and disregard. I hope you are willing to listen, learn, reconsider, and then lead. While I'm holding out hope that you will soon reverse course, I am angry and deeply disappointed. I believe that I know San Angelo, its celebrated West Texas decency, as well as anyone, because as mayor, I strive to serve our town with my heart and soul and enliven the place we call home. Bringing people from all backgrounds together, I promised nothing other than to show up, listen, and then respond with solutions for the greater good. Because of my inclusive approach to service, San Angelo gave me nearly 90% of the vote. Residents understood that I cared about good policy and every aspect of our city. I came to know and love San Angelo's unique sense of fairness and kindness by attending 1,500 to 1,600 events a year. They included council meetings, city drills, town halls, get-togethers, funerals, weddings, parades, sporting events, civic theater productions, barbecues, cultural offerings, boating events, hunting events, charity events, banquets at Goodfellow Air Force Base, quinceañeras, and handling out proclamations to recognize achievements throughout the city. San Angelo is diverse, and people from all backgrounds graciously open their homes to me. I know many of the men and women who serve and protect our city. I often accompanied our police officers late at night. Frankly, Congressman Pfluger, I'm grieving at the moment. I'm grieving because I know a different San Angelo than you seem to. I know many people of faith. I believe in prayer. I pray every day. I pray that the people of San Angelo support me on this issue. I humbly search for God's will in my life. I love Jesus, too. I feel his love. He calls us to rebirth. San Angelo, hear me. I'm calling for backup. What is rapidly transpiring is frightening to your gay and lesbian friends and family members. We are vulnerable. Speak up to protect us. Every family has a story of a dear, lifelong bachelor, uncle, or an old maid aunt. We have feelings. Support us. Allow us dignity under the law. Do you believe in individual liberty and equal protection under the law? Great strides have been made for acceptance in recent years. Lift us up. We are Americans, and we have struggled to be accepted and to serve throughout society and to serve our country. I appeal to you to honor our right to live our lives with equal protection. We are all San Angeloans, regardless of race, religion, creed, and yes, sexuality. Our congressman needs to hear our voice of reason and fairness. In my view, the federal government should encourage committed relationships. I fail to see how my marriage threatens anybody else's marriage. Can someone show me empirically? Marriage is a loaded term with deep religious connotations, but it is a civil construct too. Like it or not, the federal government confers many privileges that have nothing to do with states' rights. In my case, it is my immigration for my spouse, and perhaps one day, the ability to confer federal benefits that we earn through service and contribution into the system. I strive to be a law-abiding citizen, hence standing in line for over 10 years in order to legally regularize my spouse's immigration status, which is currently at risk. My life seems to intersect at two of today's hottest social issues, U.S. immigration policy and equal rights for LGBT people. While serving as mayor of San Angelo, I met the love of my life, who happened to be another man. At the time, my spouse was an illegal alien. I resigned from office in order to be with him legally south of the border. It was the most distressing decision of my life. I couldn't honestly uphold my oath of office under these conditions, so I bowed out of politics for love. Eduardo and I have stood in a long line with the hope of one day legally returning to the United States and place I call home, San Angelo. The prospect of losing federal immigration rights for my family is a looming threat. No one can tell me otherwise. Congressman Pfluger, you and I both served our country. I served in the U.S. Peace Corps in Bolivia, where I was plopped in the middle of nowhere, effectively alone, and had to make a go of it for 2.5 years. This was the beginning of my education in the need for good government, and the experience in the Peace Corps propelled me into public service. I know firsthand how fragile civil society is and the importance of the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment. I am living it. The San Angelo I know is good. The San Angelo I know is fair. The San Angelo I know strives to be respectful of everyone. This issue is personal to me. Congressman, your current posture threatens me and my family and my rights. This is my appeal to the goodness of every San Angeloan who knows me. If you are so inclined, whoever you are, speak out. I love you, San Angelo. Help your married homosexual ex-mayor and all of those you care about for whom this issue means so much. Congressman August Pfluger needs to hear from you. Be civil, be civic, be as nice as possible. We also need the support of at least 10 Republican senators. Time is of the essence. Love is love. Joseph W. Lawn, former mayor of San Angelo. Winters ISD's 4-day instructional week has both teachers and students in mind. By Greg Jakelowitz, Abilene Reporter News, published August 10th in the San Angelo Standard-Times. The Athens ISD makes its mission clear at the top of its website. Athens Independent School District, home of the 4-day instructional week. The Class 4A district, 73 miles southeast of Dallas, took a new direction for the 2019-20 school year and has not looked back. It's a direction that the Winters ISD, a Class 1A district 280 miles to the west, chose last spring to take. And the Merkel ISD just last week, with classes beginning Monday. Rochelle and Olfin, also in Region 15 with Winters, have gone to the same schedule. It's scary, WISD Superintendent Sean Lehman said. This is only the start of his third year in Winters, and he is bucking tradition. But so did Dairy Queen when it introduced the blizzard. Ice cream in a cup instead of a cone. So thick you could hold it upside down. Now it's the Winters blizzards who are turning education upside down. A catch-all day, not a day off. Wednesday marks the start of a new era as Winter's students, teachers, and staff return to school for the new school year. The key word is instructional. This is not school for 4 days. The campus will be open all 5 weekdays. Lehman said, some might believe teachers just want another day off. It's not going to be a day off. It's going to be a work day. Adding 15 minutes to the start and end of Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays will satisfy state-mandated instructional mandates. The state now requires at least 75,600 minutes, a change from 180 days. That leaves Friday open for, well, possibilities. The Merkle ISD has opted to use Mondays for its catch-all day. Those, Lehman said, rattling them off enthusiastically, include tutoring, reading sessions, student catch-up, UIL practice, helping students who don't meet STAR, and end-of-course exam requirements, and for career tech students to get more work in because those kids can work all day out there if they choose. And especially in the spring, it will give high school students who are involved in a myriad of extracurricular activities and are absent many the chance to get their schoolwork done ahead of time. Or if they miss a day earlier in the week, a chance to catch up on Fridays. Instead of needing Saturday school because of absenteeism, we'll now have Friday school, the superintendent said. As we started digging into it, it really sounded like something that we could make work for us, Lehman said. Students will gain, but so will teachers. The 4-day week, Lehman hopes, gives faculty and staff back their weekends. With the teachers in short supply, the reaction to 4-day instructional weekends elsewhere was so positive that he brought it up in the spring. Winters employs about 120 staff members, about 70 of which are teachers. There are 555 students in the district, pre-K through 12th grade. Lehman said teachers in particular were hard-pressed to get everything done during the week, and so they worked Saturdays. Wanting to have family time, Lehman said, was told by some that they gave up church services Sunday for family time. It was time to do something, and Lehman threw out an idea. What if we taught school for 4 days and gave you time the 5th day to get things done? Teachers brought in after shock wore off. This all started with the calendar committee that meets to plan the coming school year. Teachers from all WISD campuses are in this group. I usually kind of sit back and don't say anything, Lehman said. Ideas for the new year were discussed. They asked his opinion, and he deferred to them. His job is unaffected. You guys are the ones in the trenches, he told them. There has been so much thrown at educators from the state with requirements, it's hard for them to find the time in order to do some of those things. I was starting to see a lot of burnout. I was worried if I was going to be able to keep staff members. So he dropped a bomb. What about a 4-day week? He asked. Lehman came to Winters from Sonora, where he was a high school principal. He was familiar with the stress on students who missed classes for events and teachers who tried to keep those students up to speed. And what about finding subs for teachers who are out? It's hard to find teachers, but it's hard to find substitutes as well, he said. He broached the subject of a 4-day instructional week, but was shot down. We all just laughed about it, he said. But Lehman seriously believed teachers would buy in if given a chance. It has been something I've been looking at for a few years, he said. He put his theory to the test in Winters. Some reacted as if the superintendent had suggested teaching kids the sun rises in the west, or 2 plus 2 equals 22. A lot of them laughed and said, you're joking, right? He said, laughing at the memory. But he was serious. I don't care. What about that? He answered. It's up to you guys. Y'all can look at anything you want. When his group determined their superintendent hadn't gotten brain freeze from eating ice cream too quickly, they talked about it. Another meeting was set for 2 weeks later, and in between, the teachers studied the option and started seeing there could be a lot of positives for kids, Lehman said, and for them. They took it and went from there. The superintendent knew the most questions would come from elementary teachers, whose students are on more regular schedules than older students. Lehman went to campuses and answered questions during lunch breaks. I was honest with them, and they jumped on board as well, he said. I'm not the first one. I'm not reinventing the wheel, he said of the idea. But if we keep having these teacher shortages, we're going to have to be creative. All aboard this train? The plan had to pass muster with food service to feed students Fridays and work with athletics. For example, coaches would need to schedule tournament play for Fridays and Saturdays, not Thursdays. This all had to work with the community, too, especially with young students with working parents. The youngsters could not be left to their own for a day. Some in winters needed to drop off their kids early to make the 40-mile drive to Abilene for work, he said. Having activities for them and providing breakfast and lunch as usual would be necessary. Lehman said the WISD corralled an after-school centers on education grant funded by the 21st Century Community Learning Centers Initiative of the U.S. Department of Education. It is administered through the Texas Education Agency. Fridays will allow for more use of the ACE program for younger students and perhaps once a month include a good field trip. The change is critical to keep teachers, Lehman said. I've been in this business a long time. If I don't have good teachers and my teachers aren't happy, it sure makes my job hard, he said. That has been my goal, to help my staff. If your teachers are happy, guess what? Your kids are happy. If your kids are doing better, then guess what? Your parents are happy. It's this major ripple effect. Many teachers were spending most of their Saturdays at school. You know what? I like my family, and I need some recharge time, Lehman said. The mental health of his staff is important. After teachers batted around the four-day idea, Lehman said the attitude was, we can do this. If they could adapt to one state mandate after another, they could make an instructional change. Lehman said school districts smaller than Athens have been successful. They are not looking at going back, he said. Dave Lewis, the superintendent at Rochelle and a friend of Lehman, told him, Sean, I've had more applicants for my jobs. It's been good for us. Districts competing for teachers are giving this idea serious consideration, Lehman said. Make their district more appealing to be at, he said. Lehman said keeping teachers for a duration in winters has been challenging, affecting consistency. It's not about saving money either. No, it's about keeping people here, keeping my kids and my staff happy. That's my ultimate goal, he said. And it fits the district's new motto, quality over quantity. Dust up with NYC mayor gives Abbott a chance to re-seize initiative as immigration hardliner. Governor Abbott is again talking up his policy of busing migrants at the border to cities back east. And complaints from big city mayors are helping him spread a message he hopes works to his advantage. By John C. Moritz, Corpus Christi Caller Times, published August 13th in the San Angelo Standard Times, Austin. By picking a fight with the mayor of New York City, Texas Governor Greg Abbott is playing on his home turf. Abbott, a Republican, locked in a too-close-for-comfort race for a third term with Democrat Beto O'Rourke, this month began sending buses of migrants who crossed the Texas border to the Big Apple, which prompted that city's mayor, Eric Adams, to call the Texas governor a global embarrassment. Abbott shot back, accusing Adams of rank hypocrisy. The Texas to New York bus rides are an extension of the headline-grabbing initiative Abbott began in April when he announced he would begin sending migrants to Washington, presumably to give President Joe Biden and others a taste of what the influx of unauthorized border crossings was inflicting on Texas and its resources. But since the May 24th massacre inside Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, which was soon followed by a series of misleading statements by Abbott and others concerning the missteps by law enforcement agencies that responded, the governor has struggled to regain his swagger. And that has allowed O'Rourke, who has been pummeling the incumbent in town hall appearance after town hall appearance, in purple and red parts of the state, to chop Abbott's lead in the polls from double digits to around 5 percentage points. Refocusing the race on unauthorized immigration, which has increased dramatically since Biden replaced Donald Trump in the White House, puts Abbott in an arena that has served him well because it allows him to highlight the stark differences he has with O'Rourke on the topic. And the governor all but licked his chops when Adams suggested he had bused thousands of New Yorkers to knock on the doors of Texas voters on O'Rourke's behalf in advance of the November 8th election. "Make my day," Abbott replied, channeling his inner Clint Eastwood. The Abbott-Adams throwdown plays into the trope that Texans don't need any people from the Upper East Coast sticking their noses into the business of the Lone Star State. Who remembers the "gotta rope" commercials of days gone by when cowpokes on a cattle drive discovered the old cook had packed some picante sauce made in New York City onto the chuck wagon? In appearances before the recent Conservative Political Action Committee's Texas gathering in Dallas and later on Fox News, Abbott talked up his bus initiative, which is part of his overarching multi-billion-dollar Operation Lone Star border policies, as necessary to illustrate conditions along the Rio Grande. Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser has said the bus policy has pushed social service providers in her city to the tipping point. A casual viewer might come away with the impression that Texas law enforcement officials were chasing down border crossers and hauling them onto buses heading toward Arkansas, Tennessee, and points north and east. It's actually much more nuanced. So far, about 6,600 migrants have been bused to Washington and about 400 to New York, Abbott's office said. Federal immigration authorities, however, have apprehended more than 1.6 million people along the border with Mexico since October 2021, and Chris Magnus, the commissioner of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, has said those who are deemed ineligible to remain in the United States, at least temporarily, are sent back. In July, Abbott authorized National Guard troops and officers with the Texas Department of Public Safety to apprehend migrants suspected of crossing illegally. So far, about 3,900 state apprehensions have been made, and those taken into state custody have been sent to the federally operated points of entry along the border. The only people who have been given the bus rides are first processed by federal authorities, meaning they are not targets for expulsion, and then they must volunteer to make the trip. Compared with the sheer number of apprehensions at the border and the unknown number of migrants who are not apprehended, 7,000 or so people taking the bus from South Texas to the Northeast might not seem like a whole lot. But it's quite enough to get the attention of the mayors of the two U.S. cities that anchor the nation's most influential news-gathering operations. And that gives Abbott the opportunity to grab a very big megaphone on an issue essential to his plans for a third term. John C. Moritz covers Texas government and politics for the USA Today Network in Austin. And now, local sports. High school. Number 15 Rochelle Hornets hope depth pays off in return to playoffs. By Aining McDaniel. Published August 16th. With almost double the number of players listed on his preseason media information form as he listed for the 2020 season, Rochelle High School head football coach John Cherry has more confidence than ever in his team's abilities. Going into his fourth season leading the Hornets, Cherry said experience as well as depth are strengths for Rochelle, which, despite not always having strength in numbers, has compiled a nifty 19-12 record over three seasons and come into the last two seasons with the preseason state ranking. This season could be the best yet, as the Hornets are ranked number 15 in Class 1A Division II by Texas Football Magazine. "This is the most excited I've been about a team in a long time," the coach said. Cherry, who began his head coaching career at Calvert and worked two seasons as an assistant at Richland Springs before taking over at Rochelle in 2019, said the returning experience means less need for learning and more emphasis on team chemistry. "We finally have a good senior group with good numbers and big, strong body kids. But last year we had five freshmen who started off and on, and so now we're starting off and on. Five sophomores with experience on top of those seniors," Cherry said. "We're not changing what the kids already know. I'm in year four, so everybody on the team has only played for me. So day one, we're district ready. Everything rolls because it's instilled in them." Rochelle returns five starters and 20 letter winners, which in D2 ball is a real luxury. The Hornets lost two letter winners off the team that finished number 15 in the rankings, despite missing the playoffs behind Richland Springs and Cherokee. The seniors are Josh Barron, Sean Estes, Hunter King, Dylan Reimer, Tony Soto, Jason Morgan, Robbie Pitcox, and Cody Marsh. Barron, Estes, King, Reimer, and Soto were all district selections, while Reimer was also a second-team all-region pick as a defensive line. Other all-district selections who return are Bobby Cole Estes, Kelton Williams, Merrick Howell, Justin Lopez, and Gunnar King, all sophomores. Tomas Palacio is a junior returner. Freshmen are Clayton Johns, Jace McCormick, Christopher Lopez, and James McCannelly. One of the great things for us is it's not the same six kids playing offense that are playing defense the entire game that you're just wearing out, which does seem to be the norm in six-man football, and a lot of times what needs to happen, Cherry said. But I think we're talented enough and deep enough that not a lot of those kids will have to cross over, and that really, really helps us, just so far as longevity of the season and even during a game. We get to the fourth quarter and we're pretty fresh. Another thing that keeps Rochelle's players fresh is a real commitment to the team aspect of the game. I'll rotate three spread backs for the second year in a row, Cherry said. My kid stats aren't going to be crazy off the charts because they're splitting reps, but the kids understand our success is going to come from that. They're not self-centered, and if you combine those three players, we'll have good stats at that position. Barron, 5 foot 155 pounds, is the head of the spread back group, but sophomores Williams, 5'6, 155, and Howell, 6 feet 140, give Cherry confidence in the strategy to keep kids healthier and fresher. A big loss for Rochelle will be felt on the sidelines as Cherry's brother Mike, who has been the defensive coordinator for three seasons, took over as head coach and athletic director at Blanket, about 45 miles away from Rochelle. Blanket is actually in the district, 15-1A, that Rochelle's district meets in the first round of the playoffs. We could potentially have a Cherry Bowl in the first round of the playoffs, John Cherry joked. He's going to do great things. I was super excited for him. It's a double-edged sword. I'm about to lose the best defensive coordinator, my best friend, and family. But on the flip side, you're so excited. He's ready to take that step. Cherry said his brother was well-liked by the athletes and that they were sorry to see him go, but loved him enough to help him move out, sending him off with hugs and promises to meet in the playoffs. A lot of times, a coach leaving a school doesn't look like that, so it was a cool moment for sure, Cherry said. Matt Maciel, a college roommate of the Cherry brothers and a coach at Rochelle for 2 years, will take over as DC. He'll be picking up where Mike Cherry left off in terms of scheme and terminology. A newcomer to the staff is not a newcomer at all, but former All-State spreadback Marty Flores, who helped Rochelle to a district championship in 2015 and best playoff performance, two playoff wins, in school history. He's an exceptional talent and very excited to be a part of it, Cherry said. He wants to learn and everything I've asked. He's done it quickly and done a great job of it. The kids really seem to love him. Mike Watkins, a native of Brooksmith, who has coached most recently at Rising Star, will help Maciel with the defense. He has a lot of value on the X's and O's, Cherry said. He's extremely dedicated and always running by me or Maciel, trying to learn it in depth, how all the parts move. While Cherry has high hopes for the Hornets, there's definitely an elephant in the 16-1A room, or rather two elephants. Winners of 9 state championships, Richland Springs is ranked number 4 in the state by Texas Football Magazine and is the favorite to repeat as district champ. But there's also Cherokee, who is ranked number 10 and come as close as any district team in recent history to dethroning the Coyotes. I think by the end of the year, we'll have 3 top 10 teams in our district, and it's unfortunate that a top 10 caliber team is going to be sitting home, said Cherry, whose team must earn one of 2 playoff spots, unlike in 11-man districts where 4 teams make the playoffs. If that team was in another district, they might be 3 rounds deep in the playoffs. We were probably a pretty good example of that last year, said Cherry, whose team last made the playoffs in 2019. We were top 15 and finished 7-3, but didn't make the playoffs, and nearly every team we played last year made the playoffs, including some D1 teams. Our kids are starting to realize they don't always have to be the little brother and believe they can compete with anyone. Junction football team hopes to take a step in the right direction in 2022, by Charles Bryce, published August 15th. When a new head coach takes over, there will oftentimes be some growing pains along the way, and that's been the case with the Junction High School football team. In Scott Freeman's first year as the Eagles head coach, Junction finished 3-7 overall and 0-5 in district last season. Junction will look to make some traction in District 14 2A Division 1 this fall, despite being picked 5th by Texas Football Magazine. The Eagles are built for the future with a strong sophomore class and just a handful of upperclassmen. Junction returned 6 starters on both sides of the ball. Offensively, quarterback Caden Roberts, 6'2", 160 pounds, will share the backfield with fellow sophomores Angel Cruz, 5'10", 150, and Aiden Cardwell, 6'1", 185. With one season in the new system, the Eagles are more comfortable with Freeman's air raid offense. "Being here for the second year is great," the Junction coach said. "The great thing about that is my entire staff from last year stayed. I think the players understand and realize our expectations." After beating out a senior to be starting quarterback last year, Roberts suffered a concussion around week 3 or 4 and was moved to running back. The sophomore QB heads into the fall as the Eagles' trigger man again. "I'm real pumped for it," Roberts said. "These running backs I've got here in the room are my life savers. I tell you what, they're some great dudes." Cardwell has put on about 15 pounds of muscle. "I started hitting the weights with one of our seniors last year, and he was just a very big boost to my ego and helped me get to where I am right now," Cardwell said. Freeman says Cardwell and Cruz give the Eagles a strong 1-2 punch at running back. Aiden's a big power back, and Angel's our speed back who can get outside and definitely stretch the field for us, the Junction coach said. "Our offensive linemen, I think, will be our strength, though. Last year, we had to use a new offensive line, all 12 in both scrimmages and 10 straight weeks. That was not fun." The O-line will include sophomore Marco Ponce, 6 feet, 160, senior Rafael Benavidez, 5'10", 330, Gavin Gonzalez, 5'10", 160, and junior Richard Colvin, 5'9", 150. Also freshman Sergio Ochoa, among others. "I think we're going to make quite a bit of touchdowns," Colvin said. "We've got a pretty good offensive line going this year, good running backs and a good quarterback." Cruz added, "I trusted Cardwell a lot, being my lead blocker, and he can run the ball pretty well, too." Freeman talked about how things will look on the other side of the ball. "As far as the defense goes, we're replacing pretty much all of our linebackers from last year with younger kids, but that's okay," Freeman said. "I love the way they're flying around the ball right now. We're doing a couple different things on defense, but we're really fast and we're flying to the ball. The secondary is going to be our strength on that side because of Angel, Eliseo Rivas, and Reagan Levian. And Caden Roberts, he's moving from outside linebacker to safety. All those guys have experience. Angel had 4 or 5 picks as a freshman before he had a season-ending injury, so we're excited to see him back and ready to go." Junction is scheduled to open the season on the road against De Leon on August 26th. The district opener will be October 7th at home against Stockdale. Texas football picked Mason to win the district title, followed by Stockdale, Johnson City, and Harper. The Eagles don't want to be the only one left out when the postseason arrives. "We have some playmakers, and I think that's the thing that excites us as coaches, and we play and we practice extremely hard," Freeman said. "Our youth will show at times, but I do think that by the time district gets here, we're going to be able to be competitive in every game. It's going to be a dogfight. If a couple plays here and there go our way, we're going to be just fine." Freeman senses that his players are hungrier this time around. "The kids that we have this year, they busted their tails in the summer," Freeman said. "Again, It helps when your coaching staff stays. We had a great summer and before that, a great track season and a great baseball season. The spring was great, being at practice. There's a little bit different energy. There's been a couple of days when we had to tone down practice because of how physical we were. The freshman class we have, it's just not a typical scout team you're going against. They're getting after us and they're making us better. And so that's been a lot of fun. The Eagles are built for the future with so many young players, but there's also an urgency to get things in the right direction in 2022. I'm not only excited for this year, but I think our junior and senior years are going to be great football seasons for us, Cruz said. If we can do well this year, it just helps us pump ourselves for the next 2 years. If the Eagles are able to surprise some people and make the playoffs this year, Freeman says it would do wonders for the program. Not making it last year hurt. But honestly, it's been a while since we've been in the playoffs, Freeman said. I think it's been 2 or 3 or 4 years now since we've been in there. But just for the program as a whole and how young we are, we're going to have 95% of our guys back for next year. If we can't get in this year, which I do believe we can if things go our way, just for the program morale, that's going to shoot us into basketball season. And hopefully we're competitive and fighting for our playoff spot there, too. And then we get to track and baseball, and hopefully we do well in those sports, too. Freeman concluded, football's kind of an exciting time of year where everyone's fired up. And if you have a good football season, that kind of bleeds into other sports. So we're hoping to do that. Brady Bulldogs, not satisfied with last year's success. By Charles Bryce, published August 10th. After reaching the Class 3A Division II regional semifinals last year and snapping a 12-year playoff win drought, the Brady High School football team will try to duplicate that success in 2022. Brady finished 8-4 overall and 4-1 in district season. The Bulldogs finished in a three-way tie for the district championship. The Bulldogs returned 13 starters, 7 on offense and 6 on defense. Texas Football Magazine picks Brady to finish 3rd in District 2-3A Division 2 behind state-ranked Early and Wall, which are each dropping from 3A D1. Brady head coach Shea Easterwood says he's got a hungry group of players again in 2022. The first thing is, they're not satisfied, Easterwood said. They're not leaning on last year's success whatsoever. The thing that they're using as motivation is to stay humble and hungry. There's been several times with this group of young guys that had a lot of player-led stuff. They'll text me in the evening saying, "Hey, coach, have you got a football that we can use? I'm going to throw routes. I'm going to go do this, and I'm going to do that." I really think that their success in reaching 7-on-7 Division III state final further enhanced their bond. I feel like this group is special. Easterwood provided an example of that. Monday morning, we started the practice really early, and our running backs coach came over to me and said, "Coach, this is the best group of running backs we've had since we've been here, and I'm not talking about just skill-wise," Easterwood said. He said, "I got over there, and they were already doing the drills by themselves, and they were giving great effort, and there wasn't any missing a beat, and they were going hard. That's a testament to their leadership. So I feel like our leadership is strong." The Bulldogs should have a lot of firepower on offense again. Senior Hayden Baronet is a third-year starter at quarterback. He has 2 proven running backs in J.D. Ibarra and Zeke Jones. "Jones is a fast and quick guy, and I'm the big, strong, get-through-the-hole guy," Ibarra said. "Our quarterback, he's got experience, and we've all been with him since peewee football, so we all have that bond." The receiving core is solid, with playmakers like Keegan Ferris, Izzy Morales, and Isaiah Tarr. Baronet feels confident with the kind of skills players he has around him. "I think it's some of the best we've had in a long time," the Bulldogs QB said. "Anybody on that field, skill-wise, can make plays, so we've got to focus on getting the ball to them and in space and let them make plays. Those guys can't do their jobs without the support of a strong offensive line." Kevin Avila, a mammoth 6'3", 313-pound tackle, says the O-line is coming together. I'm actually pretty confident because I've been gathering a group of guys on the offensive line and working out with them and trying to get them stronger and faster, Avila said. And they've developed a lot since our first practice of two-a-days. I think it's going to be a pretty exciting year to see how far they've come, and I think we'll be able to move the ball more efficiently. A lot of those same players on offense will be counted on heavily on the other side of the ball as well. Tarr has been a top-three tackler for the Bulldogs at linebacker since his sophomore year, but he's not resting on his laurels. You can't ever lose motivation, no matter how good you are, Tarr said. You can always get better, and there's always room for improvement. The Bulldogs have a leadership council that includes seniors Baronet, Ibarra, Avila, Ferris, Morales, and Tarr, along with the junior Jones. We met seven times this summer, just kind of talking about what it looks like and raising the standards, Easterwood said. We don't want to be a one-hit wonder around here. Most of those seniors, their expectations are three rounds or more, and that's what they want. That's a good sign, and that's a testament to those guys' leadership and their work ethic and buying into what we're asking them to do. The Bulldogs know they'll have their hands full, trying to make a run at another district championship, but they know they're capable of doing it. It's definitely going to be a knockdown, drag-out district-wise, Easterwood said. There's not an easy opponent on the schedule. There's a lot of good coaches in our district, and a lot of good athletes in our district, and a lot of good teams, and a couple of teams dropping from Division I to Division II. For us, to be district champions, we have the opportunity to do that. We have the skill set and the weapons around us to be able to do that. It's going to be our execution level and whether our line can gel and things like that. Brady will open the season on the road against Comanche August 26th. The district opener is scheduled for October 7th at TLCA. Three of the Bulldogs' five non-district opponents are ranked in the top 18 in the state. As far as that goes, that will definitely get us ready for our tough district, Easterwood said. As for preseason prognostications, the Bulldogs want to prove that they're better than a third-place finisher. I think that we should be number one, Ferris said. I don't like our position there. Reagan County Owls look to carry spring success into 2022 football season. By Amy McDaniel, published August 10th. Big Lake. In winning a district championship in boys basketball last year, the Reagan County High School Owls might sound like a team that happily left a three-win football season in the dust in mid-November to forget about it until late spring. What actually happened was the immediate start of preparation for the 2022 football season. And because the Owl athletes were also able to succeed on the hard court as well as the tennis court, baseball field, and track field in the spring, they are riding a wave of confidence they hope carries over into a new era of Reagan County football. We hope so, said second-year head coach Kyle Brown. As soon as football was over, we implemented our off-season program, so they were in it for the whole year. Brown took it further, having his team vote on team captains just as school ended, hoping they could carry it through the summer. This summer, we had more kids in the weight room than we've had in a while. It has to do with the kids buying in. There's a core group of those varsity kids. They did everything you wanted them to do. Our strength is going to be our chemistry. We've got a bunch of kids who get along and who want to be here. Reagan County was realigned into Class 2A Division 1 at the last UIL reorganization of districts in the spring. So the Owls, who struggled to a 3-7 overall record and an 0-5 mark against one of their toughest 3A Division 2 districts in the state, are hoping their athletes fit better in the lower division. Senior Dylan Odom and junior A.J. Avalos were the team picks to guide the Owls through off-season workouts, through basketball team camps, through 7-on-7 football, and even some prospect camps. Brown said the players couldn't have picked better leaders. Both those guys were in the weight room nonstop, the coach said. Odom, who was new to Reagan County last year after playing two seasons at six-man Eden, said the adjustment from 1A to 3A was tough, especially considering district competitors Lubbock Roosevelt and Abernathy played in the Region 1 final. It was real tough playing against Division 1 recruits coming from 1A, said Odom, who has blossomed to a 6'4", 200-pound tight end defensive end. He's a big kid, and over the summer, with basketball and 7-on-7, he's really confident in what he's doing now, and we expect him to have a big year, Brown said. Avalos, 5'10", 170, will be making the switch from slot receiver to running back, and Brown thinks he has the tools to be featured back in the run-and-gun type offense the Owls continue to develop. AJ's put on about 15 pounds, and he's gotten a lot stronger, gotten a lot faster, Brown said. He's one of our fastest kids. He had a good year in track, and we expect him to have a breakout year. Avalos, although just a junior, takes the responsibility of captainship seriously. We have a lot of young players, and we're trying to prepare them, Avalos said. We got voted team captains. That means something to us. In addition to Odom and Avalos, others like seniors Eli Hernandez, Angel Botello, Angel Martinez, Eduardo Encinas, Angel Flores, and Alexavier Reyes have been part of a strong tradition of Reagan County athletes competing in youth summer sports of all varieties. Junior Raymond Saldivar, along with sophomores Kaysen Brown and Jarrett Brown, are also part of the core. They've always done something, competed together, the coach said. While the Owls have depth and experience at the skill positions, their weakness lies in numbers with the experience along the line. Hernandez, 5'9", 225, is the most experienced player on the team and will be counted on to lead the way. There also will be a bit of a hiccup as the season grows closer for the Owls. Returning starting quarterback Kaysen Brown, 6'4", 180, is just a sophomore, and the doctor said he's still growing. He's had some nagging injuries that could keep him out of the scrimmages, but hopefully not too late into the start of the season, the coach said. Instead, the Owls will call on Jarrett Brown, the quarterback's younger brother, who was a top defensive back last year, to pace them through the scrimmages behind center while Kaysen recovers. When Kaysen returns to the lineup, Jarrett will go back to his regular position at receiver on offense. While Reagan County is moving down into what should be a more competitive district, the Owls still haven't convinced most preseason pollsters they can contend for a district title against the likes of Sonora and Cristoval, along with Forsan and Ozona. Odom and Avalos aren't buying it. Honestly, we're going for a district title, Odom said. Now here's a column from Allison Watkins. Water conservation especially important when dealing with record heat and drought. Column published August 3rd. This is turning out to be a historic year for heat and drought, and while we are lucky to have started out the year with higher amounts of water in our reservoirs than we did in 2011, conservation is just as important as ever to protect our drinking water sources. We all need to take part in efforts to reduce water use and not waste it. Landscapes and gardens are important and valuable parts of our homes, businesses, parks, and athletic fields, but we must be good stewards of water and make the most of what we do use. Consider all the possibilities to make the landscape and garden more drought tolerant and irrigation methods more water efficient. There are many ways to reduce water use in the home landscape, and the Earth Kind landscaping principles are a good place to begin. Planning and design, practical turf areas, appropriate plant selection, soil movement, efficient irrigation, effective use of mulch, appropriate maintenance, and rainwater harvesting. In addition to designing and maintaining the landscape to make it with less water, try to find ways to recycle and reuse water so that potable water can be reserved for other uses. This could include utilizing gray water or air conditioning condensate to flower beds or shrubs, setting up a rain barrel for when rain returns, or even something as simple as putting a bucket in the shower to catch water while it heats up for use for plants, or emptying the melted ice from the cooler after a cookout into a potted patio plant or flower bed. Remember that every drop counts, and the more we can make small changes in our daily habits, the better off we will be in the future. The Texas Water Code defines gray water as water discharged from sewers, bathtubs, sinks. not used for food preparation or for disposal of hazardous or toxic materials, and close washing machines. The city of San Angelo limits the use of gray water to the washing machine only, but those living outside city limits could include the bathtub and or bathroom sink in a gray water plan. Gray water can be a good source for water for the landscape if set up and managed properly. If there is less than 400 gallons per day of gray water flow from a single family residence, there's generally no permit required to allow gray water to flow into the landscape to water plants. Visit https://tomgreen.agrilife.org/horticulture to see a publication with more info. Every drop counts, and every effort, big or small, to make the landscape more drought tolerant makes a big difference for our community. Apply thick mulch to beds and gardens. Utilize drip irrigation instead of sprinklers. Choose tough plants. Reduce turf grass area and replace with other features that need less water. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu. Tips for Helping Your Landscape Survive Through the West Texas Summer by Allison Watkins, published August 11th. The more our desirable landscape plants and vegetables struggle in the heat, the more the weeds seem to thrive. There have been many questions lately about controlling khaki weed as well as mesquite trees sprouting in yards. Here are some tips for getting landscapes through to the end of the summer. Khaki weed is a bothersome plant that is prevalent in West Texas. Khaki weed grows flat, spread out on the ground with oval-shaped leaves, and produces painful, annoying burrs. It is very opportunistic and grows well in bare spots and thinned out turf. So the first and most effective means of control is to ensure something is occupying the soil. Deep mulch, dense ground covers, and healthy thick turf are the most important things that can keep khaki weed from taking over the landscape. That is easier said than done in a year like this one. Post-emergent herbicides that contain a combination of 2,4-D with mecoprop, carfentrazone, dicamba, or metilfurin, for example, Fertilome brand weed-free zone, are effective for controlling young existing plants. Apply early when the plants start to emerge while they are still small. Large mature plants will not be easily controlled with herbicide and should be physically removed. Mesquite tree seedlings have been popping up all over landscapes and should be removed while small and easy to control. Some options include digging to remove the crown and as much of the root as possible, or cutting down to ground level and carefully treating the stump with a brush killer product to keep from resprouting. Lightly trim back perennials and roses to encourage healthy new growth for better fall blooms. Hand water any stressed perennials that are struggling to survive and replenish wood mulch to a thick 4-inch deep layer to help plants make it through the end of summer. August is a great time of year to plant wildflower seeds. This year was not a very showy year for bluebonnets and other spring wildflowers along roadsides due to early drought conditions. So if you'd like to bring some into the landscape to enjoy next spring, get seeds spread before fall rains come. Monarch butterflies migrate through on their way to Mexico in the fall. So prepare ahead to help them on their way by planting heat-tolerant nectar flowers now, such as lantana, salvia, and Greg's Blue Mist. The Concho Valley Master Gardeners are expected to host their annual Fall Landscaping Symposium on Saturday, September 10th. This full-day event features five speakers covering a range of topics that will provide helpful information for homeowners interested in beautifying their landscape. Pre-registration is required before September 7th. Visit https://txmg.org/Concho Valley for info or to sign up, or call the extension office at 325-659-6522. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension agent for horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.